Collins is Canada Land's Director of Audio. Fact check on this episode by Max Collins. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We're going to talk about favors from rich friends scandal in the Trudeau cabinet that's getting a bit overlooked, what with the holy of everything else that's going on. But mostly, we will be talking about what could be the most widely viewed Canadian political interview ever, Jordan Peterson's interview with Pierre Poilievre. We will talk about what the incredible viewership numbers on that video mean for where Canadian media is headed. And I don't know how many of you made it to the end of that long interview, but we will talk about Pierre Poilievre's offer to swap wives with Donald Trump.
I think that's a deal that President Trump would take because it's good for America and it's good for Canada.
Wait for that. Welcome back to the show, teacher and TikToker Frank Dominic.
So much fun stuff to talk about.
Frank, I have been asking the question for months now. Once Pierre Poilievre is prime minister and he goes through with one of his primary promises of defunding the CBC and getting rid of the media subsidies that are paying for a lot of reporters' salaries here, and we lose thousands of reporters and news organizations go under, I've wondered, okay, fine, but where do you expect Canadians to get their information from? Even from his perspective, like, who's he going to talk to?
It's looking great for social media grifters.
I think we know who he's going to talk to.
Hello, everybody. I had the opportunity and the privilege today to speak with Mr. Pierre Poilievre, who is the leader of Canada's Federal Conservative Party, but also, barring catastrophe and God willing, Canada's next prime minister.
So Jordan Peterson sat down with Pierre Poilievre, and as is often the routine now, the legacy media follows, whatever you want to call online media. And the takes that I was reading were a lot of like eye-rolly, like, who the hell has time for these two for an hour and a half? I watched it so you don't have to. I should get some danger pay for this one. Feel for me. A lot of this kind of like commiserating tone.
I watched the Jordan Peterson interview with Pierre Poilievre so you don't have to. You guys really owe me for this one.
Well, for my own mental health and well-being, I've had my eyes and ears focused on the World Junior, so I didn't dive deep into Jordan Peterson and Pierre Poilievre.
Everyone really wants the nation to know that they didn't watch it unless they had to. Do you know who did watch it?
You?
Yeah, along with...
a few million people, potentially?
At this point, I think that we're at something like 43 million views, and that's just on Twitter. Then on YouTube, it's sitting at around 3.3 million views. And then there are all these other platforms now, the conservative Twitter wannabes and video platforms. And then there's like, it's being clipped and shared on TikTok. And then you've got Peterson's podcast, which like a ton of people listen to. So you add it all up, but like how many people have seen slash heard at least parts of this interview? Tens of millions of people. This is not something that happens like ever for an interview with a Canadian politician.
So that's the thing, is that those views on Twitter, is it actually 45 million or
no,
is it just 45 scrolls past? You know what
no,
I mean?
It's not, but all social media analytics are bullshit. But as Cory Doctorow says, my bull numbers are higher than your bull numbers, right? So the way that Twitter counts a video view is like, you know, whatever it might be, I don't know if it's 3 seconds or 30 seconds. So, and a lot of the people who you're counting the same person two or three times, but the apples to apples is to compare that to other Canadian politicians being interviewed
on Twitter. Which don't hit those numbers at all.
I'm not saying they don't hit those numbers at all. I'm saying that they don't come close. It's my job to keep an eye on media consumption, among other things. And the success of this video feels to me like a watershed moment. Like, do not ignore this moment. Chris Sully saying online, I am truly amazed by how many times I've heard and overheard Jordan Peterson's conversation with Pierre Poilievre mentioned at the pub tonight. This pub is in Toronto Center, Liberal Stronghold. There's a lot of talk in American media about this inflection point that was reached somewhere in the last 12 months where more people got their information from post-legacy news sources than legacy news sources. That's, you know, the Gladwellian tipping point where this trend has reached the point where it actually matters more. People talked about this a lot with, like, why Kamala should have gone on Rogan.
You know? Go to where the people are.
Go to where the people are versus the tactic that I think is a failed tactic of describing that entire conversation, that entire discourse as deplorable. And the mistake that Hillary Clinton made in saying that's a basket of deplorables. The mistake that Mark Miller, Liberal MP Mark Miller, just made. What does he say about this Peterson-Poilievre interview? Not the biggest surprise in the world to see these two greasy walruses promote each other's ego. Is this where we're headed? I have two things to say about that. First of all, bravo, greasy walruses.
Honestly, it is a funny chirp.
That's funny.
It's hilarious.
I don't even know. Are walruses greasy? I like the wordplay there. Greasy walruses.
It's a really good, evocative imagery.
And then you look at the image of Peterson and Poilievre, and they just don't look like wholesome. Like, yeah, they are greasy walruses. Okay, fine.
Pierre looks exhausted in that interview, by the way. Like, he looks like he doesn't really want to be talking to Peterson.
And so, yeah.
They get the party, I get the hangover.
Oh, you definitely are going to get the hangover.
It's true. I would say he does an incredibly good job in that interview. But parking that for a second, Mark Miller getting that line in about them being greasy walruses is the stupidest thing that any liberal MP could be doing at this point. Because when Hillary Clinton called all of the people deplorables, she is speaking to her crowd who want to feel virtuous and like we're not like those scumbags.
But the out crowd is bigger than the in crowd.
And there's no coming back from that. When you've been called a deplorable, like, okay, you think I'm subhuman. You think I'm dirt. I guess I am on this other side now. It's hilarious to me to see these Canadian media figures, whether they are legacy media figures or people who are like making TikTok careers for themselves, who much like me are playing to audiences that are a fraction of the size that Jordan Peterson commands. I am not a fan of Jordan Peterson. We have done a lot of investigations that have revealed things about Jordan Peterson. I've done a lot of criticism of the things Jordan Peterson has said. I've written critically about him in the New York Times. We have to live in a reality-based world. Jordan Peterson is a major figure. And the fact that this like 90 minutes of conversation plus like paywalled content like for the Daily Wire.
I'm going to talk to Mr. Poilievre for another half an hour on the Daily Wire side.
Is getting numbers like that, like, I know that those aren't real numbers, but that number is larger than the population of Canada itself. There's an order of magnitude difference in the new normal. There's no corollary on the left or even the center. And you can say to this question of accountability that I bring up at the beginning of like, who is Pierre Poilievre think he's going to answer to? What is the media? And you could go after him and say like, this guy doesn't like, we've asked for an interview, he's never gotten one. But the Liberals have no higher ground there morally because the only interview that Canadians heard with Trudeau
was 22 minutes, right?
Happy New Year, Prime Minister.
Happy New Year, Mark.
You're wearing your Swiftie bracelet.
I still have it.
How old are you? Well, you had to remember, you know, you can't really dance like no one is watching. You have to dance like someone is filming you on your phone.
Well, that's just the era we're in right now.
Well, if anybody needs to shake it off.
Okay, there you go. See, I know. Now I'm going to go.
That's it. He canceled all of his year ends, and it was taped before the break. In this moment of national crisis, what did Canadians hear from Trudeau? He went to his friendly just as Poilievre went to his friendly. And the only difference is that nobody gives and the audience size is very, very different.
So one thing I think that we should be looking at is that it's only right now, after this election in the U.S., that Democrats and people on the center and the left in the U.S. are looking at mobilizing media in a way that will move things away from mainstream media TV to more influencer or personality-based focus like the Republicans and conservatives have in the U.S. since the days of Rush Limbaugh Radio, right? So this is something that the right has been working on in the U.S. for decades. And the Democrats are only just now picking up on it, just like how the conservatives in Canada are only just now picking up on it. The benefit the conservatives and right-wing influencers have in Canada is that they can piggyback off of the audiences of people like Jordan Peterson and Elon Musk, Joe Rogan, and other creators who give more credence to people on the right. Even if like they're not inherently right-wing or Republican-type people, you're still going to get more of a boost from that. And what I think people on the left and on the center in Canada need to start doing is finding their own ways to mobilize, create their own media. So, for example, there's a few creators like Rachel Gilmore. I see Steve Boots on YouTube and on Twitter and some other platforms. Creators who are creating content, Canadian content. We are also filling our own niches and voids.
Americans have been trying for a long time to replicate. I mean, this goes back to, I remember Air America, when they tried to combat against Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and American right-wing media by having a left-leaning talk radio network with people like Chuck D and Mark Maron talking left-wing stuff.
The only benefit of doing the morning show was, like, no one gave a f-. You know, like, all they cared about was Franken and, you know, a couple of other shows. But we were getting there. No one was in the office. We were doing on the air that was crazy.
It just didn't work. It was an audience failure. No matter how big the right-leaning media gets, it still plays an underdog role, and it gets a lot of its fuel and a lot of its satire and a lot of its juice out of being like, we're here, independent and fierce, taking on the establishment.
You know, the liberal media is all saying, well, surely you wouldn't want to trigger an election during a liberal leadership race. Excuse me.
We're saying what the establishment won't say, even though we have larger audiences than the establishment.
That's right. They can still play David even when they're the Goliath. So now you're seeing that flipped around and you're seeing, like, what's the biggest TikTok from the Canadian creators that you're mentioning? The ones where they criticize the Jordan Peterson video. So they're still using Peterson's brand and fame. And, you know, I'm not throwing stones because we'll put his name in this episode's title as well, because people want to hear about Jordan Peterson from a critical point of view.
Because you got to go where the people are, and that's what the people are talking about.
Well, definitely we want audience, but we also want to criticize the media, and increasingly things like this are the media. What am I going to talk about, the National or that Peterson video? So I think it is becoming increasingly my job and the job of anybody who's a media watchdog or critic. Look at videos by Jordan Peterson. This is where Canadian eyeballs are at. And if this is what is standing in for holding politicians accountable, I have questions. Let's hear some of the tough questions that Jordan Peterson asked of Pierre Poilievre.
What do you think you guys are doing right? Why should Canadians believe that the vision that you just laid out is something that you hold personally dear? Tell us what you've learned. What did we do wrong as a country? Who are the people you have in positions to implement your plan? And I'd like to know what you think their strengths are. Let's close with this. How are you a different person than you were 2.5 years ago?
My toddler asks harder-hitting questions when she wants to know what's for dinner.
It was really shameful, but what do you expect? The guy doesn't even pretend to be doing a journalistic interview. The interview is
philosophical.
Like, it's like presented to Canadians as meet your next prime minister. Like, it's essentially, here's an endorsement. In what way is this distinguished from just an advertisement for Poilievre? I suppose because no money changed hands. You can't say that anybody else has the higher moral ground over Poilievre because Trudeau went on a series of podcasts. It wasn't just Mark Critch. He won't come on anything critical. He canceled all of his interviews. He won't come on our politics show. Jagmeet is doing the TikTok rounds. I expect politicians to go for the maximum exposure for the lowest amount of accountability. And the only thing that's ever made politicians sit down for a grilling is a transaction where, in order to get the exposure, you have to face the accountability. And that machine is broken.
It sucks that my generation and everyone who's going to come after that has to now deal with the fallout of that, because we don't remember an era where people were accountable to media.
The question for me, and I think for journalists, is how can we make ourselves matter? How can we make ourselves like, you have to come here. You have to face me. You have to answer these questions. Do the people want a interview like that? Do they want to see 2 hours of these greasy walruses rhetorically flailing each other?
Also, I, on behalf of all Canadians, want to thank you for your immense courage and the personal, political, and non-political price that you have paid for standing up for your convictions and defending freedom of speech, because I know you have paid a very big price for that.
Thank you, sir. It's been a privilege, far more than a price.
It's more interesting and informative to watch a tough interview. So the puzzle I'm trying to solve is, how do we build audiences that expect that, that want that, and that make us popular enough that politicians have to subject themselves to that.
It's rough because whether it's Survivor, Desperate Housewives, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, people like being part of what is popular. And we're at this tipping point where what is popular? It's Rogan. I don't like listening to Rogan, but I will have to inevitably go and listen to some clips of a Rogan interview if I want to be part of the online discourse. And that is just where we are at.
I have respect for people like Rogan the same way I had respect for Rush Limbaugh or Howard Stern. They are good broadcasters. Rogan is curious about his guests and he asks questions. I don't think he's terribly informed. I don't think he has any sense of journalistic responsibility, but I think that he maintains a conversational space where he wants to ask questions of people he finds interesting, and it's a very warm and inviting place. We've got to, like, lose this snootiness about this. Like, I think that people want to listen to good conversations. People got tired of the elitism of journalists always presenting themselves as the people who know better than you.
And that's why gatekeeping. And I think that's, as much as I hate that term, it's a legitimate concern, I think, from the average person.
After the break, we will dare to duck behind the Jordan Peterson paywall to report on an additional 30 minutes of hot, greasy walrus action. Wait for that. If they're going to run 90 minutes of Peterson and Polyev, what didn't they run? What was for subscribers only? So God help us, we paid for a temporary Daily Wire subscription. Here's a little peek at what was too hot, or I don't know, just I think not of interest to the wider audience. It actually was interesting what they saved. And this has to do with what the biggest question in Canada is right now. What, as we talk about what's the future of the Liberal Party and what's Trudeau's legacy, what's not getting talked about is, like, what is our plan for dealing with Trump? Especially as Trump's rhetoric around the 51st state continues to heat up and we hear about this economic force that he intends to use against Canada. So what will Polyev's approach be when he's negotiating with Trump? And Polyev and Peterson got into that.
What I would say to President Trump is that the gains that Canada gets from increased access to the United States, I would spend largely on our continental defense. Let's take out a map of our shared continent. Where do you believe we need to do more to protect our shared security across that map?
Mm-hmm. That would include the securing of the northern border.
Of course, the northern border and then the Arctic. Then let's come up with a plan to do that, and we'll do our part.
Okay, so you'd start with border security and military issues, perhaps.
Yes. Well, I think that's because I think that's what they're really concerned about. So it goes from zero sum to a positive for both countries. I think that's a deal that President Trump would take because it's good for America and it's good for Canada. So it's the deal that I would push.
We just saved you a subscription to the Daily Wire there, listeners. There's Pierre Poilievre saying that, like, he would take out a map of Canada and ask Trump, where should we build up our military?
Can I tell you why that's genius? Like, here's the thing. I don't like a lot of what Pierre has to say, but the guy understands people in politics. Trump would love to point at a map and say, put more military here. That goes right into the type of behaviors we've seen with him with hurricanes and him drawing new lines on maps. That is politically, I think, while it sounds silly, a great strategic move if he was to physically actually do that. I just don't think that the other things that he was talking about in terms of pushback to Trump and the American government are going to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if, like, abdicating our sovereignty and our own, you know, self-determination over our national defense
to a
psychotic American president, if we can kind of put aside those concerns, yes, it plays well to Trump's ego to turn this into a risk game where Trump wins. Where would you like us to put our helicopter, sir? It's true. That is good psychological manipulation that would probably be effective of Trump.
And he frames it in a way where it's like, oh, yeah, like we're doing this because we're allies. But, like, where we're really going to fight them back is at natural resources. We're going to build up our natural resources.
I'll be very blunt. I intend to approve refineries and LNG plants and hopefully pipelines so that I can bring that production back to Canada and make us more energy independent.
As if there's not the infrastructure that is currently being worked on, he's making it sound like he's going to snap his fingers and overnight we're going to magically have the stuff that we need to not send our natural resources to the U.S. to be refined.
Look, we're having a conversation about the practical realities of things in a world that has become pretty absurd. And to have a reality-based conversation like this is to discuss these absurd characters talking about absurd things. But I don't know what alternative we have. The only alternative, I think, is to live in the world that you wish it was, or to pretend that these things aren't real. What am I talking about here? Here is a member of parliament from Mississauga, Ikra Khalid, pretending that this just isn't real. Did Russia fund this Pierre Poilievre interview? She asks. Okay, and I guess this is substantiated by Trudeau himself, who during the inquiry into foreign interference said without any substantiation that Peterson is funded by Russia. Of course, Peterson denied this allegation from Trudeau. Is it true? Maybe it is. I don't know. Or does that mean that Russia like funded some like, you know, Google placement of Peterson content? I have no idea, because we have a prime minister who's doing red smear stuff without substantiating it. How many years did Americans waste pretending that Trump wasn't real? He was just a Russian invention.
It's been about a decade now.
Here we are going down the American road again. Did Russia fund this recent Pierre Poilievre interview? I guess we'll never know, because he refuses to get his security clearance. Peter Julian of the NDP. This saying definitively, this is part of a massive foreign interference strategy, which is the only reason Pierre Poilievre is leader of the Conservative Party right now. Peter Julian saying that not with reference to the Peterson interview, but with reference to this Luc Le Brun dialogue that's coming up. So Luc Le Brun, who is a journalist for Press Progress, which is funded by the Broadbent Institute, which is an NDP-affiliated think tank, he was banned from the R Canada subreddit after a piece of his was shared on there. All of these people on the journalistic left are investigating, like, is Reddit controlled by Russia? Is R Canada controlled by Russia? Is the entire conservative ascendance in Canada controlled by Russia? And I have huge problems with this. Not because there isn't some Russian interference in our discourse. We know that there is. But A, because it's created this atmosphere of like smearing people as red, as Russian agents. It's not just Peterson who gets smeared. It's David Pugliese gets this, because nothing has to actually be substantiated. You could just point a finger at anybody.
I think one of the things that people are doing now is they're misconstruing domestic Canadian right-wing issues, not issues in terms of like political discourse, but issues in terms of like legitimate fundamental issues with like the far right in Canada with Russian interference. So, for example, anybody who's been on Reddit knows that for at least the last five, if not longer, years, the R Canada subreddit has been controlled by Nazi adjacent style moderators. And that is a legitimate thing. That has nothing to do with Russia.
No, we reported on this years ago. I think style is doing a lot of work there. But yeah, the people, it is of concern that the biggest, you know, like who cares about Reddit? Well, 3 million Canadians are subscribed to R Canada. It's the default subreddit for Canada. And it's where a lot of people go to get their Canadian news. And the moderators are anonymous people who have like weird alt-right
connections. Yeah.
Conspiratorial connections. Ooh, scary. I go to R Canada, and what do I see? A bunch of links to mainstream news stories. I am not afraid of R Canada. I think it sucks that they're not transparent and they banned Luc Le Brun.
And there is some curation that prevents certain types of dialogue from occurring. But at the end of the day, like conflating that with Russian interference.
Let's know as much about that as possible. Let's hats off to any journalist who's trying to get us behind the scenes of the Redditors at R Canada. Fine. But yeah, that is not.
It's not interference.
It's not a Russian op. The reality is people are voting for Poilievre because they want him to be prime minister, not because the Russians convinced them to.
Yeah, and I think when we talk about foreign interference, I think the thing that Canadians should be more concerned about is not Russia, but Elon Musk, mainly because he has already shown that he is more than willing to interfere in multiple countries' electoral situations. You look at not just the US, but the UK, Germany, other countries in Europe he's actually started to make comments about. And now with Canada, I'm not concerned that he retweeted Peterson's video. Like, that's his prerogative. What I am concerned about is that he tries to start meddling in conservative politics in Canada. I don't think Pierre wants that at all. I don't think Pierre is going to give in to Elon the same way that we have seen it occur in other places. But I am concerned that he is going to try to force his way into the Canadian conservative sphere. And I believe that to have a healthy democracy, we need fundamentally strong, conservative, liberal, progressive, all types of values. I don't think that Elon Musk has a place in dictating those types of values. So when we talk about foreign interference, I'm not concerned about Russia at this moment. I'm concerned about, I don't even know, is Elon American, Canadian, South African? Like, what do we label him?
I think that whatever people listen to or watch, they just need to ask, like, if you were to ask Peterson, like, do you consider yourself a journalist? Is this fact checked? Is it your job to hold Poilievre accountable? I mean, even he would say, no, it's not.
He would say he's a truth teller, but he wouldn't say that he is a journalist.
Absolutely not. And I think that we have to figure out some way to reintroduce ourselves to the public, rather than just like beating people over the head with our virtue and saying like, you need us, we keep democracy alive. We actually need to illustrate the contrast and the value of the work that we do so that we scale to the point where it becomes a necessary node. You should have to pass through the scrutiny of somebody who follows basic journalistic principles and whose role, it's not even so much about like, we're better at this than everybody else. It's like, what is your role? You know, Peterson's role, like in his brain, is some, you know, mythic hero. If your role is to represent people's right to know, people's right to have their leaders held to account, this is what I mean when I say just I don't care if it's somebody doing it out of their bedroom or out of a newsroom. If the person speaking to the politician thinks that that's their job, those are the people who need to somehow make their case to the public and hopefully have audiences that somehow come close to the size of these, like, astonishing figures. I thought Peterson would be done by now. Like, I don't find him a very compelling interviewer or speaker.
Most people I know who are conservatives in Canada are mostly done with Peterson, because even when they found things in what he said that was valuable, it's the stuff that he says that's kind of like unhinged that pushes them away from him.
Polyev was so smart in that interview because he let Peterson
say all the crazy.
He went, like, he just sit back and Peterson just like waiting for opportunities to just go off.
Well, there's been a real conservative swing, especially among young men. Well, no wonder, because they've been demonized for, 30 straight years for every aspect of their masculinity, from their play preferences to their proclivity to destroy the planet with their ambition.
The parts of the interview that Pierre was the weakest on were the parts when he would start saying, like, oh, the wokest and the socialists.
And they changed their name to woke, and now they claim they don't want to be called woke anymore. Mm-hmm. The socialists always try to disown the things they've done because it's manifestly disastrous.
We basically, what would you say, imported and invented racism in Canada. Right. As a consequence of policy.
Wokeism seeks to divide people into these different groups and subgroups, and we see the results in a 250% increase in hate crimes.
When he starts getting into that kind of stuff, even people who I know who are dyed-in-the-wool conservatives are like, okay, can we stop talking about this?
Culture war stuff.
Yeah, and using specific slang and targeted terminology. Once we can move away from that, I think that especially a guy like Pierre might actually have a really strong opportunity to convince more Canadians that he is not the boogeyman that people make him out to be, including myself.
I think he overall succeeded in that in this interview, and I think that his big brand shift is going to be moving away from being this little weaselly prick who just, you know, kicks Trudeau in the shins and says the word woke 100 times to being somebody who you could conceive of as a statesman.
Less of a troll and more of a thoughts person. Like, I don't know.
Overall, he did appear that way more than he didn't in that interview, which is a sharp contrast with a very ill-advised anti-wacko video that the Conservatives put out, which was just like...
A little much.
There's probably nothing to fear from most wackos. They often serve as an odd form of entertainment. But what happens if they get into positions of power? What happens if they run a government? Let's start with their leader, Justin Trudeau. He invented a new economic doctrine, wackonomics. The first rule of wackonomics: no math allowed.
The economy is not numbers.
With these people in power, anything is possible. And so the saga continues with a wacko government that mirrors the eccentricities of its leader as Trudeau attempts to hold on to power. The most outrageous moment for these wackos may still be on the horizon.
I think it was them playing to their silliest, most juvenile. It's almost like they let the interns write one or something. And it's so funny because they got like a... some British guy to narrate the thing, which I think is like, this is going to seem really dumb. How can we make this seem like satire and not just like schoolyard taunts? Get a British narrator.
The Conservatives right now, especially Pierre, are good at trolling, fundamentally subverting expectations and putting people in a position where they can't either defend their own position or they can't accurately attack yours without coming off as sounding like the crazy person. Pierre is so good at that.
Yeah, it's an easier thing to do in opposition than in government. That's our show. Thanks for joining me. You can email me about today's show at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. I'm posting things on Blue Sky. You can find me there. Frank, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, all the things.
This episode's produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins, who also did the fact check on this episode. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.